Paul Rasmussen, and if you're just getting back into the groove, it's Friday, so you can have your weekend, and a lot of people still have this day off and are back in action on Monday. One of the stories, Paul, toward the end of last year that caught my attention was finally Pittsburgh Public Schools banning cell phones around the entire district, which is the largest school district in the region. Some of the schools have had policies in place.
Yeah, the policies were set on a school-by-school basis until the end of the year, and that all changed.
Brought a lot of questions about safety in terms of, I don't think anyone can deny that it's a distraction when you're talking about being in a classroom environment. But joining us, former Secret Service agent John Hudson is the head of his own company, Security Consulting Solutions, and we've talked to John in the past. John, Happy New Year. Welcome back.
Happy New Year, Larry. Thank you for having me.
I'm sure you have dealt with this question about whether it's better or not to have cell phones in classrooms. From a security standpoint, what are some of the pros and cons?
Yeah, so, Larry, just a little bit of background. I've been dealing with the school security since 1999, since the Columbine shooting, and I've seen the evolution of, you know, the physical protection, technological protection, and now as we enter into the age of personal communication devices overall, and we look at the pros and cons. I've written school policy on the use of these PCDs, and what we've used is a number of different databases to include, you know, breakdown of school shootings, because we're looking at safety as well as some other factors that come into play. But from K through 5, 6 through 8, 9 through 12, and the colleges and universities, because of the various age groups, you can't just, you know, I wouldn't say you can just say, hey, one size fits all, and boom, no phones at all in any of these schools based on the age groups. So we take this information that we've, you know, gathered from psychologists, law enforcement, and security experts. And we've said, okay, we focus on the student safety, we focus on academic focus, the digital responsibility, and basically in the instructional effectiveness. As the schools have noted, these are distractions. You know, high school is a little bit different from grade school. You have to take into consideration many different factors, to include, in my own personal life, my grandkids have been recently, in the last couple of years, diagnosed with diabetes, and these smart devices, such as their phone, alerts to them when their blood sugar gets too high or gets too low, and reminds them that, hey, boom, they have to eat. So there are certain considerations that you have to consider, even if you're, you know, in the fourth or fifth grade, where you're, you know, responsible enough to at least and trained by your parents to use a phone to provide to you a medical alert, as well as your parents at home. I've experienced some of this in my personal life, as I mentioned. So there are some exceptional cases that you have to consider when putting out a policy of, boom, just no phones, period. So you really have to break it down by age groups. This ban overall for, hey, high school, grade school, completely all of the schools in the Pittsburgh public school system, as you mentioned earlier, is not a one scenario fits all. So once you've broken that down, and we've done this through our policies that we've written for those various age groups, the pros, obviously, in a higher education, high school levels, you can use this device to help communicate to the outside if you have a, let's say, if an active shooter incident. I mean, granted, this past year, there have only been about roughly 80 shootings during the course of 2025, which has dramatically come down from, say, around 300 the year before and 400 the year before that. There's been about 1,300 school shootings since 2020. So schools, what this data tells me are the schools have begun to look at the security posture of their facilities and have deterred some of the school shootings through social media, kids reporting other kids that have said inappropriate things and cast aspersions on the school. So they've been able to nip that in the butt quickly. But there are some pros. The cons, obviously, they're distractions. Social media distractions, bullying, and things like that. So you have to take each case a little bit differently. And I think if you broke that down in age groups, if I were to summarize this, you broke this down in age groups from K through 5, 6 through 8, and so on, 9 through 12, and broke down the policies, outline your pros and cons, use your databases that are readily available to help guide you in your policies, you could have a more effective policy and I guess probably harmony amongst the kids in schools. But yeah, I can see it from both sides. Right.
John, I have a question about the concerns that parents have. You mentioned the medical issues with your children, also the school shootings, or you have police activity and they've locked down the school because they're at work in a nearby neighborhood. What's the right workaround for school policies on cell phones when it comes to parents being able to contact their children?
Yeah, first of all, we have to go back to those age groups because there isn't one size fits all. If you're dealing with K through five, it's going to be a little bit differently. You have to rely on staff intervention. You have to rely on school nurses. There's probably a minority of children that have some medical issues that would call on a smart device to help them and assist them in caring for their personal treatment. Again, I've had some personal experiences in that area, so I'm pretty well versed there. When you get to the higher groups, the grade school, the middle school, the 6th through 8th, and then the 9th through 12th, you have a different maturity level. And, your 9 through 12, you want these guys to have phones. They have to coordinate rides after schools. They have after school activities. They're a little bit more mature in using it. Doesn't mean that you can't lock it down during the school itself and provide a policy in place where, hey, we're going to put it in the paper bag and throw it in your locker for the day or something along those lines. So there are restrictions that you can implement based on your policy. And there's got to be repercussions if you don't follow those. From a security standpoint, Larry, there's only been a few documented cases. There's no national database that suggests that, hey, look, it's from a security standpoint, a child or a student used this phone from inside of an active shooter situation and was able to navigate the police into a right direction as to which direction the shooter was heading, what color clothes the shooter was wearing. So there are some pros there, but it's a very small amount of cases that have been documented. The Oxford High School, Michigan State University, Santa Fe High School, just a very few in the last several years. So the argument from a safety and security perspective is small, but there is some validity to it.
Well, there are exceptions already in place for somebody like, as you mentioned, your grandson, that you would utilize a phone for medical reasons, and they do have exceptions, but it'll be interesting to see what happens when the policy takes full effect in the coming year. For the most part, I think teachers welcome the fact that there'll be less distractions in the schools that don't already have that policy, but we'll see what happens this year. John, appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, Larry. Have a great day and a happy New Year.
You too. John Hudson, former Secret Service agent, who is the head of his own company, Security Consulting Incorporated. There's no doubt, though, Paul, in my mind, and I talked to Tamara Rush about this, whose three children grew up. They had phones in school. She kind of argues that that's the way it is, and it shouldn't be an issue.
Well, it's also touches your family. Your son's a teacher here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
he has to deal with it in the classroom.
But think of the distractions now, and with the videos and artificial intelligence videos that are out there. And Aaron, you call it doom scrolling. A lot of that goes on. It's just a brain rot, let alone a distraction from being taught in a classroom
or interacting with your classmates. You know, I feel like it all disappears.
Social interaction and the growth that comes with that is part of, if you're always locked on your phone, that to me is a bigger issue. So anyway, the controversy of those who don't want it to happen.
Yeah, I guess the real debate for a lot of families with younger children growing up now is at what age do we let them have one?
Oh, that's a whole nother can of worms. Right? From the P.J. Fitzpatrick Home Improvement Traffic Center, powered by Bowser Genesis of Monroeville, Ellie Popovich is checking the morning commute.
Yes, Larry, I'm looking at the PennDOT traffic cameras. An inbound on the Parkway East shows a tapping of the brakes as you near Edgewood-Swissvale, but really nothing that will slow your morning commute as you head into the Squirrel Hill Tunnels. Over on the Parkway West, you will make your way down Greentree Hill to the Fort Pitt Tunnels without any major delay. And the same goes if you're headed out towards Pittsburgh International if you have a flight. There are some brake lights near Campbell's Run, but nothing really that will hold you back in your travels. Over on Route 28, that is clear from the Highland Park Bridge down past the 31st Street Bridge to East Ohio Street. And over on the Parkway North, that is still moving right along as you head towards the East Street Valley and you make your way to the Veterans Bridge. And in downtown Pittsburgh, look for delays on Grand Street between 3rd and 5th Avenues today, as the city is removing the Christmas wreaths and trees till 2 o'clock this afternoon. So you might have a minor delay if traveling on Grand Street. Our next AAA traffic on the fives at 7:25. I'm Ellie Popovich on 100.1 FM and AM 1020 KDK.
AccuWeather says intervals of clouds, some sun, doesn't look like any more snow here, maybe a little north of I-80. 27 degrees will be the high today and tomorrow, then tonight 16, and Sunday 30 with a chance for a little afternoon sunshine, but no precip and not anticipating wind, though kickoff temperature Steelers-Ravens Sunday night should be around 20 degrees. Afternoons with Colin Dunlap, brought to you by Service Master of Greater Pittsburgh. Demand the yellow van. As we roll into a new year, I was thinking, and I don't know what prompted my memory, Paul, of New Year's Eve 1972, when Roberto Clemente was tragically lost when he was in a small aircraft taking supplies to Nicaragua that experienced an earthquake.
Actually, Larry, it was a DC-7, a four-engine turboprop airliner. And the article that I read about this while I was on break said that this plane had a history of mechanical problems and went down shortly after takeoff.
Yeah, that story really obviously still resonates, especially in this town. And they finally, talking to his son, Roberto Jr., they finally got a documentary that they really felt captured. Have you seen it yet? If you get a chance, I think you'd really appreciate it.
And where can it be viewed?
Yeah, it's a documentary. You just search.
Okay.
And you'll find it, and it's available. And
there's more than one floating around out there. What's the title of this one?
I'll get the title of the latest one.
Okay.
We had him on the show about that, but what reminded me of this also was, keep in mind, in 1972, in December, just a week before that, Franco Harris had the Immaculate Reception. And we lost Franco 3 years ago, just before that 50th anniversary. So think of this town, Paul. You know how Steeler crazy we are, right? And the Pirates were extremely relevant back then, with Roberto and Willie Stargell and all those guys. And so you have the Immaculate Reception that launches, you know, the 6th Super Bowl run, but the 4 in 6 years, right? In the team of the decade and all that. And then a week later, you lose Roberto Clemente.
By the way, the title of this one is very simply Clemente. That's all you need.
Yeah, search and that up.
By the way, you mentioned the Pirates and Willie Stargell. This morning before I came to work, one of the people I follow on social media posted a picture of Willie Stargell standing at the pitcher's mound, and behind him on the screen at Three Rivers Stadium are the words, President Ronald Reagan calling. So there must have been some special occasion for Willie, and the president called and had a back and forth with him in the stadium on the phone.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yes, Willie. Nancy and I, big fans.
Jeez, how about that?
But imagine, Aaron, obviously much younger, but can you imagine in this city, you go from the Immaculate Reception with Franco, which turned this town on its head, right? And then a week later, you lose Roberto Clemente.
I remember being in school and a group of theater people came in and acted out Roberto Clemente's career and how he tragically passed, and it just gripped me. And I didn't even really fully understand the weight of what you're describing, but yeah, I'm sure it was just like whiplash.
And then flash ahead, 3 years ago, getting ready to celebrate when the Steelers hosted the Raiders, which obviously was the team the Immaculate Reception happened against. And John Madden, those guys never got over it.
No.
But the 50th anniversary, and Franco passes right before.
Yeah, it's so sad.
I mean, you want to talk about a legend, Franco Harris, in this town, because he continued to give back to the community all of those years later.
You know, one of my favorite stories in Pittsburgh lore about the Steelers and that day, the Immaculate Reception, is the story that Mr. Rooney told about missing the play.
He didn't see it.
Right?
The chief.
Yeah.
I think he was on the elevator.
That's what he said, yeah.
He was going to greet. He was going down because he was upstairs, you know, presumably whatever owner's box they had in Three Rivers Stadium. He was headed down to console the team and, you know, give them, I guess, some encouragement for next year.
And so then the doors open and it's chaos and pandemonium. What happened?
Twirling his cigar.
Oh, neat. Great story.
Chief, we won. What? Yeah. Those are some good memories. So from the Immaculate Reception, the highest and most excited moment, maybe, you know, one of those in Steelers history, followed by one of the greatest tragedies in sports here in the loss of Roberto, all happened inside of a week.
I had no idea. I wouldn't put it together that way.
Welcome to the weekend already. If you're up and ready to roll, new year brings a lot of excitement, and at the same time, the new year also brings a lot of changes. And one of the things that you've heard a lot about, especially toward the second half of last year, is changes in the healthcare world. So we thought, let's reach out to the expert. He's the CEO of MediConnect. We know him very well, Lance O'Brien, who you can see on our live stream at kdkradio.com, presented by Metropolitan Window Company on our KDK Radio YouTube page. Lance, good morning and happy new year to you.
Hey, Larry. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here. I was excited to come back and then be off for the weekend too, all at the same time. So let's talk about, first of all, for those that don't know, you've been a great partner of ours for a long time, but explain exactly what MediConnect does.
Sure. So we help people that are looking for private insurance generally, whether it's in the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, which we're going to talk about a little bit this morning, or in the Medicare space. So we're based right here in Pittsburgh, and we really focus on education and helping people understand what their options are so they can make the best decision for themselves.
And this is one of those rare things where the advice that you give is not costing our listeners any money. You're actually directing them to the best recourse to get the best value for their money, correct?
Yeah, so we're licensed and contracted with all the major carriers, so there's never a fee for our services, whether they're signing up for a plan, and we help them with that, because our compensation comes directly from the carriers and it's standardized. So yeah, they get great expert advice and they don't have to pay anything, so it's kind of perfect.
Yeah, that is rarefied air, believe me,
yes.
As you know. So that said, help us understand the concerns about the Affordable Care Act, because when it came down to the government shutdown, which we experienced for more than a month, the major issue, as I understood, was the subsidies that go with that from the government. And right now there's a gap. So what is the situation now for the people who were relying on those?
Yeah, so a couple of things to kind of set context really quickly. First of all, there's about 22 million Americans on ACA, the Affordable Care Act, right? Obamacare, Penny in the state of Pennsylvania. That's where it gets real confusing, right? Because it has a lot of names, right? So you've got that many people that are on the Affordable Care Act right now. So that's one thing. And then you've got rising healthcare prices as it is, right? So healthcare this year, my premium, I'm on the ACA, Larry. So my premium was rising anyway. But then once you take away the subsidies, things get really, really difficult for some people. So who's being impacted the most? One is early retirees, right? Because they're not working anymore. They don't have coverage from anywhere. And usually your middle class, because the middle class is getting squeezed out on the subsidies right now. If you're a single individual and you need this coverage, $62,000. If you make over that, no more subsidy for you. Married couple, $84,000, right around there, no more subsidy for you.
So generally, can you put a percentage increase that people would feel who are in that situation? I'm sure it varies greatly, but if you're looking at a whole year of expenditures, how much will that add to their health care costs?
I mean, for some people, they're seeing their premium go from $100 if they were getting a good amount of tax credits up to $500 or $600.
Wow.
And which if they were paying $100 before, they were getting a significant amount of tax credits, Larry. They're not going to be able to afford $500 or $600 a month.
No, I don't know anybody whose budget would allow that kind of increase in a single year. So what are some of the things that people can try to do to mitigate that rise of expense?
So there's going to be two things that are going to happen. When they set up the ACA, there was platinum plans, gold plans, silver plans, bronze plans. The more beautiful sounding the metal, right? Platinum, that's the best, right? And bronze would be the least. What we're seeing happen is people that had gold plans that would be considered good coverage for maybe that $100 or $200, they're moving down to bronze plans for maybe $300 or $400. They've got much bigger deductibles, co-pays. So basically, that's one of the ways people are addressing it is, hey, I got to have insurance, but I can't afford this gold plan anymore. I'm going to go to a lesser quality plan and still pay more than I was paying last year. So not a great solution. The other solution's worse, Larry, to be honest with you. And that's there's expected about 4 million people are going to drop their health care coverage because they can't afford the premiums, which is about 15% of the people that are currently on the Affordable Care Act.
We're with Lance O'Brien, CEO of MediConnect. That said, Lance, just curious as a sidebar, part of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare was that you had to report that you had health insurance to the government. Will that still be something you'll have to do for this year or for last year too?
That's something that they kind of eased on after the first couple of years, right? Because it's kind of hard to force people to have it if they can't afford it and then penalize them because they couldn't afford it in the first place. So that's something that eased and is not really a big part of the program anymore. But again, people need health care because here's the other thing, Larry, that most people aren't talking about is the stress that this is going to put on hospital systems, doctors, because now there's going to be more people that don't have insurance and there's going to be uncompensated care, which is going to further hurt the cycle.
And you bring up an excellent point because post-pandemic, many medical groups that are providing the medical services are experiencing financial challenges of their own because they're not getting paid back for the work they're doing. And to your point, they're just going to add more people they got to take care of, and that'll put a big strain on a lot of them and may actually cause eventually, if they don't mitigate this, some more hospitals to close.
Yeah, especially in rural areas. That's why you're seeing acquisition of smaller hospitals. I mean, this is when we're really getting into the weeds or the theory behind a lot of what's happening. But the truth of the matter is we do have a healthcare issue. I'm in it. I live in this healthcare space, and we kind of do have a crisis going on that we have to figure out how to fix it because if people don't have health insurance because they can't afford it, then they're going to put off care until the point that they can't. Then when they do need care, someone's still got to pay for it, even though they don't have insurance, and around we go.
Well, reach out to MediConnect for your unique situation. And if you find yourself in that place where you don't know what to do, it's a great opportunity. Lance, appreciate you getting up early for us today, partner. Thank you so much. Great information. Have a terrific weekend.
You as well, Larry. Great to be on the show this morning.
CEO of MediConnect, Lance O'Brien.